Quarterback back at the five, steps up, gets drilled. Yes, sir, he gets mashed. And that is going to be the ball game. 6-5-4-3. They can't snap it. They can't stop it. They can't win it. Alabama wins the ball game.
Gary Thomas, linebacker, Alabama.
He was a nightmare for people that had to try to prepare for him because he had unique skills.
Just go get the quarterback. I felt sorry for some of those poor tackles that came in and had to go against him because they didn't realize what they were getting themselves into.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun. Woo! Woo!
Son, y'all got to do better than this.
Lights out.
Sacking the cornerback is just like you devastate a city, or you cream a multitude of people. I mean, it's just like you put all the offensive players in one bag, and I just take a baseball bat and beat on the bag. So each time he came over there, I tried to tear his damn head off.
Let's play some football. Let's play some football.
The pressure is on. This is Off the Edge on Tide 100.9.
Focus on what you want to do, what you want to accomplish. Think about that. Don't think about how you feel, how tired you are, how hot it is. You got to push yourself on the field when you're playing football.
It's my honor to present the National Championship Trophy to Coach Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide.
To me, this is the ultimate team. All these guys bought into everything they needed to do to be the best players that they could be. There's more togetherness on this team than almost any team that we've ever had. And they had to overcome and persevere so much adversity through this season, and they've done it magnificently. And I'm so proud of this group for what they've been able to accomplish in going undefeated and winning the national championship.
Streaming live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and the Tide 100.9 app. Here is your host of Off the Edge, Jacob Harrison.
Hello there, good morning, welcome in to Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. Jacob Harrison with you, digital managing editor of Town Square Media Tuscaloosa. J.R. Moore behind the glass as he is on a Friday afternoon or morning or whatever time of day 11 a.m. is. The Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher saga continues. Yesterday, about 3:30 on ESPNU Radio, SiriusXM, Nick Saban says, "I should have never really singled anybody out. That was a mistake, and I really apologize for that part of it."
Backpedaling so fast, you can see smoke coming off the Nike Monarchs.
He was a cornerback at Toledo. Toledo, Kent State. Where did Toledo come from? It's all in Ohio, I guess. Ohio's just one big make-believe place. Everything's the same. It's all as bad as Cleveland. Anyway, Kent State. Nick Saban, yes, I think Nick is telling the truth in everything that he's doing here, right? And that's not Crimson Kool-Aid. That's not bias. That is objectively looking at this, because I think there's some points that Jimbo has made throughout this entire thing that have some merit to them, right? I also think Jimbo has gone a little bit overboard as well. I mean, let's be real. You don't need to be an Alabama fan, I don't think, to look at the fact that Nick Saban gave three solid examples to back up a overarching point of, I don't think NIL is sustainable in its current state. Because here's what you do when you have an argument. You back up your argument with facts. You don't just say, oh, I think this is bad, or I think this is good. You say, this is what it is, And here are some examples why.
Right? Who wants to hear that? Like, if you're listening to a New York Yankees fan talk, why would you want to listen to how much better they could be if things were benefiting them? Like, nobody really wants to hear that, even if it is, like, perfectly logical.
No, I think you're right. That's where I think Jimbo has a point, is when he said something along the lines of, well, it's very easy to be the best when you've got all the advantages. Well, here's the problem, Jimbo, that I think he and a lot of people that are fully on board with that side of things is he earned those advantages. He earned the right to be called the GOAT. He earned the ability to say something and it have impact. He earned the right to have college football change and evolve over the past 15 years to try to slow him down. Nick Saban earned all of that. The same way players earn everything they get through NIL. Even if it means coming out of high school with an NIL deal ready. You don't have to like that, but that is part of it. And that's where I disagree with Nick to a small degree. Because inherently, the way that all of this is set up, NIL was going to be used as a recruiting bargaining chip. Anybody could have told you that. And if you thought that wasn't going to be the case, you were naive. If you thought that the rules were going to be strict and clear and easily followed when there are different laws state by state, you were naive about the entire situation. And I admitted to some naivety about this whole situation yesterday as well with Gary, in the fact that I didn't think it was going to get like this chaotic. But in the grand scheme of things, you had to have seen this coming. And then the collectives, this is the part of it that can be frustrating on the against Nick Saban side. Nick can't complain about collectives when Alabama's got one, right? I know Nick's got nothing to do with the fact that it was formed. I know that Nick's got nothing to do with how it operates, but it's nothing but going to be beneficial to him, right? And this goes back to the same arguments I've had against Scott Satterfield and so many other guys that have wanted to come after Nick Saban, or even a Dabo Swinney who refuses to evolve. Use these things to your advantage so that you can be the best. If it's not breaking the rules but bending them, then do it. Do it. Because throughout time, this has been a thing. And let's, again, not act like Jimbo Fisher is the saint that's painted in gold and you know, put in front of some stained glass. Like, Jameis Winston is a very, very dark mark on his record. Very. The amount of crap that kid got away with at FSU is unparalleled. Not to mention his exit from Florida State being as dirty as it was to go to A&M and get one of the most ridiculous buyouts in a contract we've ever seen. Is Jimbo through and through respected as one of the highest character coaches in all of college football? Yeah, sure. Say that about most college football coaches, though. Most college football coaches get that kind of respect when they've been doing it for a long time and aren't complete and total scumbags like Urban Meyer. That doesn't mean you have earned the right to be absolved from all of your sins in this sport, because to be good at this sport, you have to play the game dirty. And yesterday, Gary was making some slight comparisons between Nick Saban and Ric Flair, and to be the dirtiest player in the game, to be the greatest of all time. It's part of the cycle. The John Cena aspect of it, that's not real. Nobody gets to the top by being Mr. Goody Two Shoes 100% of the time. Doesn't exist. Not to mention John Cena got popular because he was a bad guy anyway. With Ric Flair, though, to beat the man, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And Jimbo beat Nick one damn time, and now he thinks he's the man. And now we go back, and yesterday I brought this up as well. 5 5-star recruits in Jimbo's tenure at Texas A&M before this past recruiting class. Then he got 7 in one class. And I'm sure we've all seen the Emmanuel Acho video. I'm not going to play it because I don't totally agree with Emmanuel. And he goes off the rails and makes jokes and makes other points that are unbelievably incorrect. But the fact of the matter is, you don't go 8-4 and get the number one overall recruiting class just because you beat Alabama in your backyard. You don't. You also don't get to look at the future of college football and say, oh, yeah, no, we did everything exactly the right way, and we would have gotten this recruiting class no matter what. You don't get to do that. NIL is something that helped A&M get what it got. And to deny that is laughable.
Yeah, you were talking about the 7-5 stars. I don't know exactly what makes me, like, if I were an athlete that were going into college, I don't know what would make me think that just because they beat Alabama, they would somehow better develop me into an NFL talent. I don't understand how they got all seven of them.
There is one plausible argument that could be made for A&M getting this class in a way that is completely clean. And that is all of those 5 stars and all the 4 stars that they got alongside it, they were on a mission to do that. If that makes sense. They want to be a part of something special like that. The same way that Nick Saban's first recruiting class at Alabama after a full season, the one that involved Julio Jones, the same way that that did, right? Because I've seen the retweet to that Emmanuel Acho video that says, makes strong mention of the fact that Nick Saban went 7-6 his first season at Alabama and lost to Louisiana Monroe. Here's the difference between Jimbo's number one recruiting class in 2022 and Nick Saban's, I don't know what it ranked in 2008, but that recruiting class that involved a Julio Jones in 2008. Nick Saban was already considered one of the best. Wasn't considered the GOAT yet, was considered one of the best, was considered a guy that you would want to play college football for. And that only got better over time. Jimbo's considered one of the best, don't get me wrong, but his career has been mired in mediocrity despite all of the success, all of the opportunities that he has been given. Doesn't matter. He has been mediocre. I mentioned it yesterday. He and Kevin Sumlin, to this point in their A&M careers, have the same record. Sumlin was already fired, and he coached some of the best players in A&M history. Johnny Manziel, Miles Garrett, all those guys. Luke Jokel. Jake Matthews, left tackle as well. Yeah, some of the best players in A&M history. And he's also squandered players like Anaya Smith. Squandered players like Jalen Weidermeyer. Squandered many, many a player. This goes both ways. And it will continue to go both ways. But at the end of the day, I do see a lot more hypocrisy out of the Jimbo Fisher side than I do out of the Nick Saban side. Because I think, again, and I mentioned this at the end of the show yesterday, I truly think because Nick Saban always does this, Nick Saban always makes a point, backs it up with examples, and says, usually a warning, is this really the way you want to go? And I think this time he said outright, purposefully, this is not sustainable. This is not the way to go about things. These are examples about why this is not sustainable, because it makes absolutely no sense at all for the number one overall recruit to go to an FCS program, even if it is to be coached by Deion Sanders. It makes no sense. And for that player to get a $1 million NIL deal at an FCS program. I understand Deion's there. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't make a lot of sense for an 8-4 program to have the number one overall recruiting class, no more than it makes any sense for a 5-7 Texas team to have a top 5 one. Does not make sense. And that's where Nick Saban has drawn the line. Is Nick threatened? Yes. Is Nick sounding a little bit butthurt? Absolutely. But is Nick right? Yes. Yes. All of those things can be true. All of them are true. At least in my estimation, based off the facts and the opinions that I've given you here. We're going to talk with AJ Spurg, get his facts and opinions on this entire situation as well. Next year on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
365, 24/7. You'll find road and utility crews, tow trucks, law enforcement, and first responders working along Alabama's roadway.
We're making improvements and helping our communities stay connected.
We're working hard to make sure you're safe on the road. Now we need your help to make sure we're safe too.
Alabama's move over law requires you to move over a lane when you see flashing lights on the roadside. And if you can't safely move over, please slow down.
Visit drivesafealabama.org, brought to you by the Alabama Department of Transportation, Alabama Broadcasters Association, and this...
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A hot, dry afternoon. The sky partially sunny. Tuscaloosa's high 92. Tonight, mostly fair with a low at 71. Tomorrow, very humid. A mixture of clouds and sunshine. Scattered showers and thunderstorms developing by afternoon. The high 88. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 84 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You're listening to Off the Edge on Tide 100.9.
Back here on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. Jacob Harrison here with you. We're going to go out to the phone lines and welcome in our friend AJ Spur at Spur FM on the Twitter account, site editor for Roll Tide Wire, the USA Today affiliate of the Alabama Crimson Tide. AJ, when you don't show up on Tuesdays, you don't get Will Smith in Miami.
Listen, that's something I'm willing to face. But, there are two coaches over in the SEC here that have to face each other on October 8th. And Jacob, I cannot be more excited for that matchup.
I mean, this is that's one hell of a buildup, right? I mean, 3.5-4 months to get ready for a contest of this magnitude. Not to mention, it was going to have its rematch factor anyway because A&M won the game last year. And coming in with this kind of recruiting class, you'd anticipate A&M should be able to be able to improve and maybe even challenge Nick and company again. But I want to start on Wednesday night when Nick had the gumption in him at a event for the World Games. And I heard this from Hunter Johnson yesterday. Apparently it was $1,000 a plate to even be in this event. Nick knew what he was doing. He was talking to people and trying to say, listen, I need help with boosters because I can't keep up with Texas oil money. I can't keep up with Hollywood money in California. I can't keep up with star power in Miami. I need some help on this as well. But his initial point to the fact that none of this is sustainable because it doesn't make sense for a kid to go play with Dion for $1 million in FCS. It doesn't make sense for an 8-4 program to basically buy all of its players. NIL has a problem and it needs to be solved. Do you think he was wrong for pointing out? He's apologized for it, but do you think he was wrong for pointing those examples out individually like that?
Well, first of all, Jacob, I just want to clear the air. At $1,000 a plate, I was not present, nor was I even allowed near the venue. So, you know, everything I'm hearing was, you know, off of Twitter and everything. But no, I don't think Saban should have apologized for singling out programs. Obviously, last night on Sirius XM radio, he appeared to apologize, clarify, whatever you want to call it. But he stood firm in his NIL stance that, you know, this is a dangerous path college football is going down where the rich are quite literally only going to get richer. All right. And Saban specifically mentioned the fact that there are players that grow up in the state of Alabama being Crimson Tide fans that want to join the program in Tuscaloosa. However, they're getting these offers from other programs, and then they go back to Alabama basically begging them to match these NIL offers so they can go to Alabama. But knowing that this money that's being thrown their way as a 17, 18-year-old kid, you know, they're never going to have that opportunity again. And who knows, 3-4 years down the road, draft stocks can shoot up and rise or plummet like nobody's business. So, you know, you can't blame the players for this, you know, and that's one thing I'm glad Jimbo didn't bring up, Saban didn't bring up. You know, at 17, 18 years old, someone's throwing six figures, sometimes even seven figures your way, you know, you're being attracted to that immediately. However, they've been naming Texas A&M by name. Jackson State, even though he never talked about Dion, nor did he mention Travis Hunter by name. And then finally, Miami, which honestly is an outlier in all of this. Not only because of their NIL past, pre-NIL, but also because their situation involves a basketball player that had a an NIL deal already on the table and is just asking for more money and threatening the transfer portal. So that I would classify as something a little bit, you know, differently. But he was talking to boosters. He was talking to people who he is trying to appeal to in order to build up that collective. You know, and Deion Sanders, honestly, I don't know if it was today or last night, he said that himself. Saban wasn't talking to Coach Prime. He wasn't talking to Jimbo. He was talking to the people there in front of him. And obviously, we're talking Nick Saban here. He's one of the most calculated people to ever have been a public figure. All right, he's basically a politician at this point. And he imparts that wisdom on his players and coaching staff. You've got to be careful when speaking to the media, when speaking in front of cameras. And clearly, you know, whether this was a calculated move or not, he said it. He did it. And I'm fully aware, or I think he was fully aware, that he knew by saying that, you know, hell was going to freeze over. And on May 19th, 2022, yesterday, it certainly did. It took over headlines all over the place. So, you know, it happened. Saban's been trying to correct and clarify, but obviously Jimbo had steam coming out of his ears yesterday, and Deion's making tiny little quotes here and there that are just popping up on Twitter.
Yeah, Deion's Instagram. Let's settle it on the field. Like, brother, that game's going to be scheduled 5 years from now. You're going to be at FSU. you mentioned early in your answer there that this NIL thing helps the rich get richer. And I think for a long time, we counted Alabama among the rich simply because of all the gold and pearls in the trophy case, right?
They are,
there you go. That's my liberal carny back in there. the fact is they've got all the trophies. They win all the games. They should be the rich. And if everybody's been cheating all along, Alabama probably has too. Therefore, they are going to be among the rich. But now, since this has happened, we've got a situation where it's, well, maybe Alabama can't keep up with the Texas Oil money, with the California money, the Florida money, the whatevers. Is that the case? Did we maybe miscalculate that? Maybe even Nick Saban himself, the value of right now dollars versus achieving your dreams of going to the NFL and making millions there?
Listen, Saban did talk about that explicitly last night. He mentioned the $1.7 billion made in the NFL from draft picks over the last 15 or some odd years that Nick Saban has been at Alabama. He also talks about how student athletes, you know, this transcends college football. This goes into, and he mentions, you know, women's tennis, softball, baseball, golf, all these things. He called them non-revenue sports. He said all these athletes combined need to be making decisions on where they play collegiate sports based on their ability to obtain an education, their ability to grow as a person, and their ability to develop as an athlete in their respective sport. And he said, for the time being, we're just going to keep, you know, betting on ourselves with that respect. We are going to, you know, not change the way we do anything drastically because of the fact that some other programs are actually throwing money at players and saying, come here, here's the money, you know, you'll join this big name program and all that jazz. That might be the road Alabama's going to have to go down here pretty soon. I think Saban acknowledges it. I think it's a known thing around the nation. But you know, as far as your question regarding Alabama not being, you know, a member of the rich class of college football, I don't think that's the case. I think Alabama maybe doesn't have as deep as pockets as Texas A&M, USC, I mean, even Oregon, you know, we look around all over the country. They may not have the deepest pockets, but they certainly do have deeper pockets than a majority of Power Five programs, at least. So if that's the route Alabama needs to go down, I have zero qualms about Alabama's ability to build up a strong collective.
Let's get to Jimbo. Jimbo comes out top of the morning, schedules a press conference, and I love the irony of this as well.
Jacob, why aren't you talking PGA Championship golf with AJ Spurr? Like, that's the big story of the day.
The boss has spoken. AJ, what's going on in golf? Because I haven't watched it for 5 seconds. No, I'm kidding. The Jimbo comes out 10 a.m., creates a press conference for himself. I love the irony of this as well, the fact that he calls Nick Saban a narcissist while having a press conference for himself to defend himself. I don't think it takes a narcissist to know a narcissist, but it is kind of hilarious there. But overall, I mean, kind of coming out full attack mode, only holds back a little bit concerning some skeletons in the closet. I mean, obviously, when we saw that this was happening and watching it unfold, we're thinking of the content. We're drooling over the opportunity to get to talk about this on radio and everything else under the sun. It's late May. We need something to talk about. So we're loving that aspect of it. But from the aspect of maybe the sportsmanship side, which Greg Sankey has shown to not be totally happy about, was Jimbo really kind of out of line here in the way that he responded to Nick?
Extremely. And we talk here about Nick Saban being out of line and out of character at the World Games event, where really all he did was, you know, say something in a calm manner that really wasn't typical of Nick Saban. You know, flip the coin here. We got Jimbo Fisher, whose eyeballs were wider than you can imagine. They were looking all over the place. He was sweating. It was odd. It was far from professional. It didn't seem to make a lot of sense. He contradicted himself in many ways. I mean, you mentioned the narcissist thing. Talks about how despicable it is that they have to handle it in this way. Meanwhile, this could have all been behind closed doors. You know, everything he's saying here could have been said behind closed doors if he would have just answered the phone call and instead of, you know, refusing to pick it up and then following it up by saying, "We're done." Come on, Jimbo. All right, let's. You want to talk about despicable and growing up? You also sat there and talked about how Saban should have been slapped as a child. We talked about the narcissism. Said he basically has a God complex and even threw in a walk on water reference. Thought that one was kind of funny. And also mentioned a dirty past no one knows about that needs to be dug into. And Jacob, if you remember, after signing day this past, February, Lane Kiffin came out and talked about how Texas A&M is going to incur a luxury tax in how much they paid for their signing class. That now seems like, you know, peanuts compared to what's going on here. But Jimbo did get mad. He did publicly respond. And a quote that he said, I pulled it up here. "I'll tell you what, I know how some of those guys recruit too. Go dig into that. I know the history. I know the tradition. I know things. Trust me, you don't want to go down that avenue." Jacob, this was said in early February. We are a few months past that now. And if I would have read that quote without prefacing it about it being in February, I guarantee a majority of people would have thought that he said that yesterday, because I'm pretty sure verbatim he almost did. This seems to be like a tactic or a trick or something that Jimbo has in his, you know, limited arsenal, apparently, of ways to attack other coaches and other programs in an attempt to defend himself, his players, his organization, which, I mean, we look at Jimbo, we look at Ross Bjork, their AD. I mean, their track record's a little less cleaner than Alabama's and some other programs out there that are kind of standing behind the Crimson Tide.
No doubt. I mentioned Jameis Winston in regards to Jimbo and the, plus his exit from Florida State. But make no mistake, the AD was the AD at Ole Miss when Hugh Freeze was there, and all the cheating was going on there as well. So, no, their slate is not clean. And that brings me to the next question, and this annoyed me to no end. And it's real. It leans on the childish aspect of it. If you are going to say about another grown man, you know, don't throw stones from a glass house, and I have the answers. I know where the skeletons are buried, and so on and so forth. If you're going to say that in a public forum and not kind of give out the details there, I think that's kind of weak. But I think it's equally as weak for him to say that in front of a press conference and none of the journalists in attendance ask the question. What did you make of that play? The fact that you're willing to say, well, Nick Saban is no saint. He's not the God he thinks he is. He's worse than the devil, and so on and so forth. The fact that you're willing to go that far but not spill the beans on that, because and I think from the journalist side as well, you're, you know, if you ask the question, maybe he just says, well, I'm not going there, and Jimbo loses all credibility in this argument if that happens, and it really shuts a lot of this down. So and if he goes on beyond that, we learn something new, right? We learn something that might be necessary to know. So either way, I think there was a responsibility there that was mishandled, but I think it leans into the childish nature, like you were saying, for Jimbo to bring that kind of stuff up for the second time and not utilize it.
Listen, I'm a journalist in that room. That's the first question I'm asking. You know, elaborate. What do you mean by that? Can you give any specific examples? I mean, sure, maybe Jimbo's going to bite your head off in anger if he doesn't feel like answering the question, because who knows what he was doing at that time or how he was feeling. But no, you have to ask those questions. Those are the kind of questions that make headlines. That's the kind of question that gives you, you know, credits in those major outlets all over the nation. You know, so if you're a small local, you know, college station journalist trying to cover Jimbo and this whole feud, asking questions like, do you want the SEC office in Birmingham to get involved? You know, that's a non-question, in my opinion. That's right. Just, you know, talking to talk. However, talking now about Jimbo and what he said and about Nick Saban and all this, Jacob, it's Nick Saban. So many people have come through Nick Saban's, you know, programs, whether it's LSU, the Miami Dolphins, Alabama, I mean, even Michigan State, people worked with him in Cleveland while he was there with Bill Belichick. There are so many people out there. Jimbo said, go ask anybody that's worked with him. I mean, where should we start? The list is long, and as far as I can see, people have really only had good things to say about him as a head coach, an assistant coach, a coordinator, whatever you want to call it. All right. I just mentioned some of the stuff he said in response to Lane Kiffin back in February after National Signing Day. All right. It basically word for word, the exact same, you know, threat of, you know, there's skeletons in his closet. You better go poke around and see what you can find. I mean, Saban is one of the most disliked figures in all of sports, and understandably so. I mean, the guy just wins. So you have now a majority of college football fans that do not like Nick Saban, have been, you know, hypothesizing for decades that this guy is nothing but a cheat and has been paying players for as long as you can imagine. All right. And here we have another, you know, championship winning, you know, somewhat respectable head coach calling into question Nick Saban's integrity on a national level in front of journalists, in front of microphones, and in front of cameras. You know, if you're Jimbo Fisher, I mean, this is kind of a smart move. We're talking about a coach here that seems to get every single recruit that he wants. All right. He wins all the games. He gets all the players. Let me just, even if it's not true, let me throw this down there and see what happens. And sure enough, here we are. People are questioning whether or not Nick Saban isn't the wholesome, you know, head coach that genuinely cares about his players' education, you know, outside of the football field. So he did what he wanted to do, and I think he did so successfully. However, I think he failed to realize, like I said, the list is long of former players, former assistant coaches, former coordinators that have worked alongside and for him, all right, that we can ask. They're all living and breathing. So, you know, I mean, if I got some of their numbers, I'll call them up. I don't think I do, though. But it doesn't make any sense. Like, Jimbo, if you've got something, say it. And there have been a lot of players. I mean, let's just look at Ajay Hall here. All right, the most recent big story name to have left the program in a disgruntled fashion or manner. And obviously, we don't know the full story of what went on behind closed doors. However, we do know Ajay Hall isn't afraid to speak his mind online. He doesn't hide his feelings. With something like this happening, and remember, he'd like to tweet about Saban that wasn't all too kind, and he clearly wasn't Nick Saban's biggest fan, all right? There have been other players and coaches to have had, you know, not the best experience within a program or anything like that. However, none of them have ever brought into question his honesty, his integrity, his ability to follow the rules, you know, and still win. No one has ever questioned that, which leads me to believe, Jimbo, you're either standing alone and willing to die on this hill, or maybe you're telling the truth and nobody wants to back you up. However, I will definitely believe the former over the latter until somebody proves me wrong.
Yeah, I read this morning an Athletic article where the journalist, the writer for that, talked to 12 or so sources, and some of them, you know, were willing to say that Nick was a jerk, but they didn't really say anything beyond that. So to my mind, this is one of those things where it's a conspiracy that is too big to be kept secret and to actually be a conspiracy. There's no legs behind it. Away from the drama aspect of it, I think, and this is my opinion, but I think that Nick Saban was just trying to use his voice to enact change. For so long, it has been him using his voice to warn, to say, if you make this change, I will be better at this change than you. I will dominate with this. Are you sure this is the direction you want to go? With this, he's saying it's unsustainable. Do you think that's what he was trying to pull here for once to create the change? And the fact that this is the first time he's ever done that, people want to say that he's being salty, that he's crying or whatever. I think he's just trying to finally use that commissioner voice that so many people think he deserves to have.
Listen, I think this is different than the typical, you know, phrase he spews, which is, you know, is this really the road we want college football to go down? When Nick Saban says that, we know there is something, some new rule, some, you know, bylaw, whatever you want to call it, that Nick Saban's about to take absolute advantage of, and no one else is going to be benefited from this. All right. He talked about it with, you know, the transfer portal, a few other things, and clearly he's got a track record of 100% here, where when he says that, he surely does take advantage of it and leaves the rest of college football in the dust. This is different. I don't think that he is necessarily warning that this is going to lead to an advantage to himself. I think he's genuinely concerned for the state and well-being of college football. I think, Jacob, this is, you know, weighing heavier on his mind than a lot of people realize, because it completely changes the game as far as he's concerned. You know, it's no longer college football, you know, in its purest form. And, you know, and this isn't to say that players shouldn't be receiving NIL, they shouldn't be paid, they shouldn't do, you know, X, Y, and Z. Because like I've said many times in the past, I'm the furthest thing from a legislator. However, you know, as far as Nick Saban's concerned, he's been doing this for decades on decades, dating back to when he was a player, all right? The game has been flipped on its head in the last, you know, five or some odd years, right? I mean, it's still at its, you know, base. It's 11-on-11 on the field playing football. And even then, some of the rules have changed to where people from long time ago aren't even going to recognize the game. Now we take a step back, look off the field. Players are being paid to go to certain programs. Players show up for spring practices as a true freshman. They don't like it. They hit the transfer portal. We see players going three or four different programs in the span of 4 or 5 years now. And I don't think Saban likes it. And I tweeted this out yesterday, and I don't know how a lot of people are going to feel about it. I always thought Nick Saban's age was going to be the determining factor in his retirement. However, the more I hear him talk about how he foresees the future of college football just in a downward spiral, I think these constant changes, these constant major changes, are really what's going to end up exhausting Saban. And it's going to be a uphill battle that he's never going to win. And he's going to realize this isn't the kind of environment I want to be in. And maybe not anytime soon, but I do think that Nick Saban's distaste for the future of college football is ultimately going to lead to his decision to step away from the game.
I'm of the mindset that I don't even think he's capable of retiring, but I think you've got a point there. If the NCAA can't resolve this NIL issue, Nick's absolutely right. The current state of the transfer portal, of basically a free agency, of NIL in its current state, it's not sustainable. So I think you have a point there. If the NCAA can't get off its ass and actually make a change and make some structure around this, then they're going to end up driving good coaches out. Kirby Smart's talked about that a lot over this offseason. Is, you know, after he lost Coach Luke off of his offensive line, he said, man, you're seeing good coaches just leave left and right, going to the NFL and going elsewhere, and simply because the structure of it just does not add up. And in the same breath as that, I find the timing of this so wonderful. I think he's such an intelligent person for doing it. The world is captivated by Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher's blood feud, and Jordan Addison made his decision to go play for the USC Trojans, and there's just been no reaction. There's been no reaction from anybody. He took the NIL deal. He crossed the country, and nobody's talking about it. What a brilliant move by Jordan Addison, Lincoln Riley, and USC. You say no one cares, JR. USC, perennial college football playoff contender at the moment.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It seems like nobody's really cared. Like, the only story has been Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher.
Oh, that one's, it's going to dominate the headlines. AJ, your thoughts on Jordan Addison making that decision? Because I think had that happened before Nick went on his tangent, he would have included that. Because truth be told, he lost Jordan Addison too.
Come on. Was Alabama or Texas really ever in the running for Jordan Addison, or was this all just a smokescreen, a time waster? Hopefully people will forget, the rumors of a $3.5 million NIL deal with a house.
He did work out with Bryce Young in California. That's got to count for something.
That's a privilege. if you get the opportunity to work out with Bryce Young, you work out with Bryce Young, whether or not you're going there, because at the end of the day, he's getting $3.5 million.
You should tell that one to the wide receiver room here in Tuscaloosa. It's a privilege to catch these passes for Bryce Young.
if this had happened a day before, or even a few minutes before the World Games event, which I love the fact that this was at a World Games thing.
It's the most coverage it's going to get.
I think there would be whiteout over Texas A&M's name and Saban's whole spiel, and I think USC would be the team mentioned. And what's Lincoln Riley going to do? Serve Saban some dry brisket? I mean, it's not there's no heated feud going on between Lincoln Riley and Nick Saban. I think the only reason why this is as animated as it is because it's Jimbo, who is known for being himself, and then Saban, who is the godfather of college football. So.
At AJ Spur, or excuse me, at Spur FM on the Twitter account, that is AJ Spur, the site editor for Roll Tide Wire, the USA Today affiliate of the Alabama Crimson Tide. AJ, I appreciate you coming back on a Friday to talk this one out, man. This is a hell of a storyline, and thankfully it's going to continue. Hopefully we get some more development over the weekend, and on Tuesday we can continue the conversation. I appreciate it, man.
Oh, I can only hope there's more by Tuesday. Y'all have a good one. Thank you for letting me on.
Absolutely. AJ Spur helping us out there. We'll take a break, come back, continue the conversation at 205-342-9904, and close down the show here on Off the Edge. Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide sports.
Aren't going. going anywhere. Off the Edge is available in the podcast center on Tide100.9.com.
Back here on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. I think it's very interesting that Greg Sankey felt the need to kind of bring this all together and say that this is a disciplinary thing where both coaches have broken sportsmanship rules, bylaws, whatever. First of all, I don't think Nick Saban did. And that's, again, it's not Crimson Kool-Aid. It's not bias. It's not. He didn't do anything different than call out the NCAA and provide examples. He did not trash. The word bought, I think, is the biggest enemy of this entire situation. The fact that he said that A&M bought its players is the biggest problem. Because that insinuates that the money changed hands at an inappropriate time. It implies that those students, those athletes, only chose A&M because of the money. It implies a lot of things that Nick Saban has since apologized for and suggests. It's not what he meant. What Jimbo did was straight up attack Nick Saban. And JR sent me this really funny tweet that I wish I would have seen while we were on with AJ as well. But Nick Saban had a footnote on Texas A&M to prove a point. Jimbo Fisher had a press conference on Nick Saban.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. Somebody that kept using the word narcissist had to call a press conference for himself.
Yeah.
And only himself.
Like, I don't think it would be wild to call Nick Saban a narcissist if you know him, right? Like, and I'm not saying he is. I'm saying if you have that kind of personal relationship, usually it's not that difficult to point out a narcissist, right? It's easy to misidentify one. Some people are hard to read. Maybe Nick Saban's like that. But the fact of the matter is, when you're how many deity references that did he have? He mentioned his God complex twice. Josh Pate had a full count on this, and called it despicable six times and
postseason numbers.
Yeah, like all of this is, it's on Jimbo to a point as well for airing the dirty laundry and not even putting out the dirtiest of laundry. If you're gonna go full board, go. Like, do it right.
Do you think it was that somebody didn't ask him about his involvement as a former staffer, or
I think he was begging to be asked. I think he was begging to be asked.
Really?
Yes, I think he was. I don't know. Now, listen, I joked about this. Sometimes you say stuff you don't mean when you're mad, and clearly he was mad. I mean, livid, and rightfully so. I think he said some things about Nick Saban he wished he didn't say. And when you're mad and you take that kind of hit personally, justifiably he did, you're not going to answer that phone, right? You're going to ignore that. But what you probably should do is cool off. But at the same time, he felt like he had to defend himself, right? Dion said he'd address it, said that he would address it. He didn't schedule a press conference for 10 a.m. And Dion is pretty self-absorbed. I think Dion would tell you that, right? So if Dion Sanders, Coach Prime, can hold back, Jimbo's got to be able to do that too. All of that to stand, Jimbo is just not out of the woods yet. But I find it very interesting that Greg Sankey brought up this sportsmanship bylaw. And is it so bad for Nick Saban to present a problem about the NCAA, be misinterpreted, be yelled at by a coach? How about when Scott Satterfield straight up calls Nick Saban out? Says that he's tampering. How about when Pat Narduzzi says that USC is tampering? How is that not a sportsmanship issue at that point? And this isn't a question for Greg Sankey. It's a question for the NCAA. I think it paints the picture. The SEC has more structure to it than the NCAA. The SEC has its rules, keeps its coaches accountable down to the letter and the punctuation. The NCAA doesn't have anything like that. The fact that a cross-conference coach can talk trash about another coach and there's nothing to do about it, that's silly. That's pathetic, really. Hopefully we'll get more development throughout the weekend. Either way, we'll be back on Monday at 11 a.m. The Jay Barker Show is up next, followed by The Game, guest hosted by Joe Gaither here on Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
Serving part-time in the Army National Guard has led to a lot of firsts for me. It paid for me to be the first person in my family to go to school. That education got me to the first day at my dream job, which I can still hold while I serve part-time. That job and the home loan benefits I got from the Army National Guard helped me buy my first house. I also know that I will be one of the first to respond if my community ever needs me.
Sponsored by the Alabama Army National Guard. Aired by the Alabama Broadcasters Association and this station.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A hot, dry afternoon. The sky partially sunny. Tuscaloosa's high 92. Tonight, mostly fair with a low at 71. Tomorrow, very humid. A mixture of clouds and sunshine. Scattered showers and thunderstorms developing by afternoon. The high 88. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 85 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Thank you for listening to